Welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 792.
What do you got on the Nerdist Community Corkboard, Kyle?
I got really excited when these people emailed in because they're a product that I use, FrightRags.com, Fright-Rags. Are you familiar with them? Do we do them?
No, what's happening? But what is that?
Fright Rags is a horror t-shirt company.
Oh, thank
and
God.
And it's all... now, the other things it could have been, I imagine that's a real, like, if you
quietly
don't...
Quietly masturbating into a horror sock.
It's just a sad-looking stained pumpkin sock from several Halloweens ago.
It's a little goblin towel.
We're learning way too much about Kyle right now.
Look, man, like you guys, don't open the crate if you don't want to see what's inside. They are a company that does original art t-shirts from horror movies, and they're kind of my favorite thing in the world, so it was the happenstance that they sent it in. They do stuff for everything. Their artists are amazing. I have a shirt from them that's from Return of the Living Dead that is all the main zombies from Return of the Living Dead. And then in blood it says, do you want a party? It's party time.
Great.
It's my favorite t-shirt ever.
Great. So where can people find this?
Go to www.fright-rags.com. And hey guys, if you wanted to send at Kyle Clark is rad a bunch of free shit, I would not fight you on it.
If anyone sent you something, would you fight them on it?
I mean, it depends. If they were trying to send me like a box of like rabid monster creatures, I'd be like, I don't want that. And they're like, take it. It's your destiny.
You,
and I'm
like
I'm a reluctant
Pacquiao,
hero.
You'd be like, I'm going to fight him.
Oh, I mean, yeah. He'd beat me to death just immediately.
He would, but that'd be
a cool way to go. Somebody delivered Manny Pacquiao in a large crate with holes in it, and then I opened it and he beat me to death.
Pacquiao-age for Kyle Clark.
God, I got to get a new mailman. This guy loves his puns.
He sure does. Katie.
Hannah Crichton, who used to run the Nerd Melt showroom, is making a documentary. Yeah.
Well, what's she making?
She and her friend Kyle are returning to Russia to find the orphans they worked with in 2007 at a summer camp and profile their lives as adults.
Oh, this could end up real sad.
Yeah, but apparently the orphanage system in Russia is completely messed up and kids are thrown onto the street at age 17 with no money and no education. So their past campers that they worked with are now in their 20s and they want to see what their lives are like. So if you want to find out more info on the film or donate to help them make it, you can go to tiny.cc/Russian Summer.
I am so proud of you, Hannah Crichton. That's
fantastic. If there's one person who can get that insane thing made, like that is Hannah Crichton. Yeah.
Hannah Crichton's your lady. This episode is Iggy Pop and Josh Homme.
Woo!
You all right?
Yeah. Sorry, that's the noise I make thinking about this episode. Woo!
Also, the noise you make when Manny Pacquiao jumps out of a crate and punches you in the solar plexus.
Like, it's just because then he crushes my windpipe.
Yeah, Iggy Pop. Obviously, you were here, and I invited April Richardson to. April didn't. She didn't sit in on the podcast. She just sat in the room.
April and I kept looking at each other and then looking at Iggy Pop.
I was watching you guys mouth the words, holy fuck. Because Iggy was. Josh is like.
He's a rock star among rock stars.
And he's also, like, comedian great
hilarious.
Funny. He is so fucking quick. And I keep pushing him to come on at midnight. He's
He'd be
amazing.
So good.
And Iggy could not have been cooler and
everything
open.
I wanted
and he was
to
everything
be.
That you would want an Iggy Pop to be. But just both great guys. They're promoting their album and tour, both titled Post-Pop Depression.
I've listened to it. It's real good.
Postpopdepression.com. I did too. It is real
super
good. Not what I expected
not at
all.
No. But American Valhalla, like once that started, I'm like, ooh, this is different than I thought it was going to be.
He addresses that, but really, 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 really fun episode. And one of those like, what is my life? How is this my life?
The whole drive here, I was like, what is this?
What is happening? It's like it was funny watching you the first time you met Rollins on the podcast, and I think that was your first like, what is happening?
Well, that was like three gigs in. I was like, this job's already insane.
And then you just kept showing up.
Yeah.
Like a cat we left some milk out for. That
and
just,
now I'm just the cat who lives with you guys
just
until Alf eats me. Scout is Alf.
Oh, that's Alf over there, too.
I put the fake mustache on Alf, by the way. Did you notice that?
Oh, you did. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. He was disguised. Yeah. I didn't recognize him for a second. Katie!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
My Chewbacca book.
That's cool.
You're gonna sign that later.
Ooh, that's so cool.
Take a blood sample and just smear your blood.
Yeah, it really needs to be combed. It must be combed.
I need a hair sample and a sperm sample.
Oh, it's just like jail
you can just
again.
Leave it on Matt.
Yeah, I've already done that.
Okay.
Hence the bleeding.
Yeah, we didn't.
Look at you. You've gotten so cash.
That's how I get in this podcast. I just let it happen.
Oh, that's
guys.
Pretty cool.
Right?
It's
right?
Totally.
Right?
You're the yeah. Axl Rose of
this is this podcast is Matt's Chinese Democracy.
And then it never comes out.
It never comes out. It'll never come out.
No one cares what it does.
I mean, that must be like, here I go. Yeah. Oh.
It's like, wait, too late?
Oh, fuck.
Am I too late?
I know usually people say too soon. No, yeah. It's too late.
Too late?
It's too late this time. What are you, are you guys just in town promoting? You live here, don't you?
Yeah.
Where do
yeah.
you, do you live in LA?
I live in Miami.
You live in Miami? Are you serious?
Yeah, man.
That's where my mom's from. I know Miami.
No kidding. What part?
She was born and she lived in, my grandparents lived in Miami Lakes. But originally, I think Hialeah and
yeah,
my grand.
I know all those areas. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Miami Lakes is—they just—they indicted the mayor for, you know, there was an FBI sting.
For what?
Recently, he was taking bribes, but then he got acquitted because it was like an aggressive sting.
What do you take a bribe for in Miami Lakes?
Construction project.
Yeah, like
we need another lake.
Yeah, this lake isn't deep enough.
You know, his name was like Potsy, Mike Potsy.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mike Potsy. Yeah.
How long have you lived there?
I don't live in Miami Lakes. I live in Pinecrest. Right,
but how long have you been in the Miami area?
Since '98, so it's almost 20 years.
Holy
so.
Shit!
Yeah, one day I just said, "Fuck you, New York."
And you wanted to go to the most opposite place you could think of.
Well, I wanted to go as far as I could get away with going. I mean, I couldn't go to Omaha, really, to sustain what I was doing. But I
right.
could get away with
it. There's no beach in Omaha.
Well
Omaha,
Omaha
Beach.
Beach.
Yeah, yeah. But
very
not,
famous.
Not the best. Not the best place.
Good back metal, Josh.
Well,
yeah, but.
Yeah, the place is the bomb.
Oh, so.
Wait.
Boom.
Oh, beach. Okay,
yeah,
beach.
Yeah, beach.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. You meant a beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, Miami's all right. I haven't been there in years. My.
You're going to anger our World War II veteran listeners.
Yeah, both of them.
There might be one.
Yeah, both of them. Your Civil War buffs, though, will be really excited.
So how are you doing? I haven't seen you in ages.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
I think
just
that yeah. comedian that
that comedian party.
That comedian party we went to.
I love that party. It's a rooftop party. We don't have to say the name, but it's a rooftop party.
What, Sarah Silverman's party?
Yeah. But I like it every year because I'm just it's in that good environment. There's free booze.
I don't drink.
Basically, that's it for me. Yeah, but I drink enough for you.
You do.
You're small. I could drink your weight, and
you're two X me.
Yeah,
I feel like sometimes I like to if there were two of me in a Titan suit, I could be Josh Homme.
Well, but I when I go to the Big and Tall store, I wear an extra medium.
It could be two of you with a trench coat with one of your heads sticking out. And you can get into those movies.
Yeah. That's a great idea. Yeah. Yeah, we can finally get into those R or X rated movies.
Yeah,
those are really right.
That we've always talked about. Yeah.
How's the press been going so far? How's it been?
Well, you mean like doing it or reading it?
Yeah. Well, you should never read it. Reading it's a terrible idea.
Well, I read some of it, you know.
How do you pick and choose what to read?
Well, it's just sort of serendipity, whatever. If I have 20 minutes, then I read some shit for 20 minutes.
Do you? Are you able? Do you personalize it, or are you able to not care about it?
I personalize, dude. I totally personalize it, and like, I wish death. Yeah, and I'll say, you know, I'll say to my wife, I hope he dies. He dies tonight in a horrible way because he criticized me this much, right? Just this much. Yeah,
well, but their relationship is so strong, she immediately hands him a voodoo doll and he gets to work.
Starts poking.
Yeah. She's got his
and
back.
Somewhere a blogger's like, my heart!
Yeah, she's like, this is him, and bang, you know?
That's all they want.
Crotch poke.
Yeah.
Just boing, boing.
No, then you'd be, you know, but then you'd be giving them more. I mean, to be murdered through voodoo by Iggy Pop would be such an honor for anyone. Like, you're giving them way more.
I have voodoo dolls. they're just like for company, you know. They're
I know, but every once in a while when my shoulder hurts, I think, that motherfucker, he's somewhere stabbing me to death.
There's a little Josh Homme. There's a little 2X Josh Homme doll somewhere with a couple of pins.
It's a big doll. Let's face it, it's a big doll.
It's a big doll.
It's a big doll.
He's not stabbing any vital organs. It's just like a shoulder. Or a back,
wishing me roughness.
But I think it's you know, I think in general, when people see celebrities or anyone they look at, they go, well, they're not human. They're these two-dimensional things. But especially someone like you, I think people go, how could that bother him? He can't even be human anymore at this point. He's ethereal.
Well, like, it just depends. They need to come up with a new angle to bother me. Yeah. Like, if you just say, you know, dude with a face like a catcher's mitt can't sing, that's not really going to bother me. You know, I'm going to go, you know.
Well, what if I said first baseman's
mitt? You know. Yeah. but if a guy, you know, if a guy puts me in an article about attention-seeking celebrities who've posed nude,
yeah,
it bothers me.
Yeah,
you know, so it just depends, you know.
Yeah. What? Yeah. Oh, you're talking about the thing that you did for the art school.
Yeah, right. You know. So,
but I think unless they would be willing to pose nude themselves, it's almost like you shouldn't be able to say anything.
The one that didn't bother me when the thing was first announced, one of the comments, you know, everybody had comments of, all right, well, big deal. So Iggy Pop has a big winky, and he thinks his winky. He can pose nude. Ooh.
I think hearing the words big winky together are really funny.
Big winky sounds like a bouncer over at, you know, right. At Finkelstein's Deli
over
or something.
Over at
the
Chinese
know.
Democracy yeah. Bar.
We're almost open.
No, what you need to do is you need to go to the yet. Door. You need to ask for Big Winky.
Yeah,
he's no. I went to college with Big Winky. He can get us.
He can get us. In.
Yeah,
yeah. It's kind of it's interesting what types of things poke into your psyche when you know, but you know better though. Like you know it doesn't.
Yeah,
mean
sure, sure. And then you just take have a drink and process it and have a. Go to the bathroom the next morning, and then everything's
fine. Well, yeah, right.
It's out. It's out. I'm good. It's out.
I just got to shit out the negativity.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's what shit is, though, is the negativity. You know, I never thought of it biologically that way, but perhaps the negativity is
I gone. Do find when I'm pooping sometimes just like, get out of me, sadness. Like I try to exercise the – and then anyone
right. But do you can only judge it by do you feel better.
Yeah.
Well, that's working.
Sometimes you do, and sometimes you're like, I think there's still some negativity in there.
It's the tingling that makes you know it's working.
Negativity out. But I saw.
Why is there blood in my negativity?
Yeah.
That's the big winky talking.
It's a funny word, isn't it? Yeah.
What, big winky?
Negativity. Yeah.
Negativity like, is a funny word.
The negativity you know. Scene every Christmas?
Yeah, every
Right.
Jesus, that's negative.
I saw the pictures from the life drawing thing.
Yeah.
And people were – they had easels all the way around.
Yeah.
And it looked like there were two people – like everyone else just kind of had a side view. But it looked like there were two people that had the view.
Actually, there were. And one of them was a really sweet old little – she's basically your basic little old lady. And it's just sweet as pie. And the guy, Jeremy Deller, who had organized it, invited me, said, you know, if you want to have a look and things are in progress, go ahead. So I had a little peek over at hers, and, you know, she drew the flab of my butt meeting at the heart of the Diaz, right? You know, with these little curlicue lines, you know, it's like a curtain, you know what I mean? Like this curtain hanging down. So,
I like that.
And that didn't bother me at all. I thought it was really cool. That was like part of the whole thing was like I didn't do it. There's been a decline, you know. I'm 68, and that things have gone downhill from when I was 21.
Sure.
And I thought it was good to document it before I disappear into the, you know, whatever, you know. So, yeah, that was a good one, the little.
But you're still in good shape, though.
Yeah, not bad, you know.
Yeah, take a look at everyone's drawings, but don't get excited when you go back over there. You know, you'll change the art.
I can't imagine there are a lot of 68-year-old people where you're like, I want to see them take their clothes off. But, you know, like you're still in pretty fantastic shape.
It was a lot of fun in the room. You could have heard a pin drop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there were 21 of them and one of me and two supervisors.
Yeah.
And a photographer. You know.
Would it feel weird or not weird at all if, like, I assume they were all fans of yours, right? Is that weird?
No. They were a cross section of life drawing students in the New York area. Some of them, in other words, were enrolled in that class, among others, as part of a curriculum at Pratt Institute, mm-hmm. which is an art school. Some of them were attending this particular academy, which specializes in classical, you know, classical foundations of visual arts. And some of them were practicing artists, and some of them were little old ladies and men who were, well, I think I would try to
take
drawing
a class.
Let's take a class. Yeah, Jeremy went, spent about a month in New York with different instructors looking for a cross-section of the American population.
Now that I'm older, I realize I haven't drawn enough balls in my life.
But there are people from all backgrounds and all ethnicities.
Sure.
And, you know.
I think that lends an air of seriousness to it that doesn't require comments, the comments section.
Right.
It's like it's an art class, a nude art, you know, drawing nudes.
Absolutely.
And so it's kind of like that's pretty much it. To comment on it, it's like sort of –
yeah, you're basically it was like that's art. That's what's been happening for thousands of years.
Oh yeah, you're posing for your art class. So.
Yeah, like a lot of people have for thousands of years. The human form
still going,
always a winner.
Yeah, come on.
But I think do you still feel like you have the same amount of stamina that you always had? Do you feel the same?
I got the inner stamina.
Yeah,
is strong. Probably when I was very young, I had too much, and I was very nervous all the time when something would come up. I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to do everything all at once. You know, now I'm a little more even. But the different – it's like a used car, the different bits. There are all these different bits that require special – you know how your car will break – you're by the side of the road in a classic car, and the guy comes, well, all that was your – cotter pin in the schnitzel.
Yeah.
Cotter pin in the schnitzel. It's a $3 part, you know. And so then you feel like, so my investment was perfectly sensible in this car that doesn't fucking run because all that was wrong with it, it's just a $3.
Yeah,
but there's a new $3 part like every fucking three
By the way,
days.
I saw Big Winky open for the Cotter Pins. They're fucking great.
Mr. Cotter Pins.
So good. Welcome back, Cotter Pins.
So kind of like that. You know what I mean? Like there are all these different bits.
Yeah. Well, I remember when Rollins was on a few years ago and he said he used to – he thought – he had a lot of energy on stage, and then he did some show, and then you went on. And he was like, God damn it, how the fuck does he do that?
Well, he's always in competition, right?
I mean, it's interesting to hear you say when you were young, you were nervous.
Yeah, it made me just sort of nervous about everything because you want, like, sort of puppy nervous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you want to do well, you want to succeed, you're a little odd, you know, it's not, you know, tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree was number one when Raw Power came. This is my luck. Right?
Yeah.
This is my life, you know. And I meet these people. I'm interested in people. I remember I came that year to L.A. for the first time, and I met these really friendly people. They were called – they were friends of the Cockettes.
Mm-hmm.
They were you know, a little bit swing this way, a little swing that way. They swing around, right? And they, there was going to be a record release party, and they said, if you give us – they were very colorful people. They said, if you give us $300, we'll decorate your party for you, so you'll have a – you need decorations, right? So I gave them $300, and it was on the roof of the Hyatt House. You had to walk upstairs. So I get there, and there were turds and vomit, plastic turds.
Yeah, you need to decorate everywhere.
On the stairs, you know. And Goddard Lieberson came to that party. This is like a guy who looked like Leonard Bernstein, mm-hmm. right? You know, head of Barbara Streisand albums, Gershwin, you know. So, you know, I kind of get stuck in stuff sometimes. But now I'm a little more cautious, you know. Like, I can qualify as an old fart.
And are you okay with that?
Well, not it, like if I'm at home, I fart very rarely, but if I'm out on the road, like, I'm farting all the fucking time, and I'm saying, fuck, you're doing some fucking press, and it's giving me the farts today, and then I have to mix the press with my rehearsal, and I'm farting all through rehearsal, and then toward the end of rehearsal, you push a lot of air as a singer, so I'm pushing and farting, and pushing and farting.
Well, but, right? but as a counterfart to that, I would say, like when we played the Colbert Show.
Yeah.
We played the Colbert, right? And we're going to do two songs. And when we played the second song, the song Breaking Your Heart is Breaking Your Heart. As soon as we launch into it, the audience stands up, right? And it was an exciting moment. And I never know what the hell he's going to do. So as soon as it's over, he's like, can we do more? We're going to play more songs. And like, do we need? And I was like, holy shit. What do we? Like, that energy coming out of you is unbridled. Like, I was like, it's not our show. I don't know. I forgot.
Just keep playing. Like, are they going to stop you?
He grabbed me and was like, can we play more? I'm like, oh, my God, what the fuck? And so what I sense is that cool, unbridled energy leaping, because that's not really age quantified. You know, it's there's a certain wildness about you that's impossible to control, and more like you just go with it.
Yeah.
And that's what's cool, you know, is that sort of unpredictable.
I thought you were going to say that when I approached you that you farted.
Yeah.
I farted.
I didn't want to. I thought I'd just share that with you, but that's fine.
Josh kind of shit his pants, just a little bit.
I kind of did, yeah. It's cool.
It's just some,
but it was a cool thing.
Yeah,
you know, it's like a cool guy thing.
All the kids are doing it now.
Yeah, yeah, bloodless, very cool.
Turtling, like all the kids are doing it.
Yeah.
What is it that you're running toward? Like when you first start out and you say you have this nervous energy? Because I was reading about you and you said your parents were incredibly supportive.
Yeah.
So what is it, what do you think, what is it necessarily that you were rebelling against, or what was driving you during that time when you started to figure out who you were?
I didn't want to lead the unenjoyable life, and I discovered early on that I liked playing music in bands. I really liked it. It was really fun. It was just fun, and it was an interesting puzzle, too, how to get the music to sound better, how to get the music especially over to the people in the room so that something started going on. And then the big part of the puzzle, how to get a job,
mm-hmm.
you know? So there's all this going on. I was learning this by being in a band in high school. I was the drummer in a cover band.
Yep.
And then we got a full-time job playing in a teen club all summer away from home, couple hundred miles from where we lived, so we actually were living the group life, playing five sets a night, six nights a week, with 5-minute breaks, right? And that was where I started, you know, like, got my first DUI, my first mug shot.
That first DUI.
I fell asleep at the wheel and, you know, things started happening, you know.
I mean, your high school picture is just this button-up looking kid.
Yeah,
with
just totally straight. And then I really enjoyed that, and I became obsessed. I was listening to some albums. There were two Bob Dylan albums and two Rolling Stone albums at those times. They were at the peak of their, I think, of their suavidad.
Mm-hmm.
And with him, it was Bringing It All Back Home on Highway 61 Revisited, and the Stones had Out of Our Heads and Rolling Stones Now. And those four albums, just listening to them over and over and over, and then studying with the Stones, the writing credits. That's how I discovered Muddy Waters and, you know, a lot of great people. So I was not a complete hoo-yah. So I had pre-enrolled for college in the September, and I went back home and I went to college, and I was like, you know, it was just, you know, oh God, I felt lost, you know, and I looked just like I look now. And that was like 66, you know, so.
Was music a really viable option at that point for people?
No, it was not very viable at all. So I said, fuck it. I'm going to be a musician. And my father was, they had indulged me in this as a, you know, my mom probably said, it's good for him and it's his interest and it's a rounded cultural thing. And then I said I was going to do it. My father got very upset and he blocked the doorway. And he's a good man, a very good person. And he blocked the doorway. He said, okay, Jim, if you want to do it, you're going to have to get through me right now. My dad could kick my fucking – my dad was a bad motherfucker. So I was like, okay, here it comes. I'm going to get the meeting, you know, because I really wanted to do it. You know, I would have to take this meeting. And then, and once he saw, then he just got out of the way, and that was that. But up until that time, I mean, I was – we lived in a very small dwelling. Our biggest one, finally, when I was in high school, was 500 square feet, mm-hmm. 50 by wow. 10. And they rented me a spinet piano, which occupied the living room. And before that and during high school, my set of drums was set up in their master bedroom. They gave up their bedroom.
Oh, my God. That's supportive, I would say.
Yeah, they would drive me to rehearsals. I lived in the boonies, you know. They'd drive me to rehearsals, pick me up. Wonderful people. Really, really great people.
Did they understand, like, when you started to break out, did they understand it? Or were they go, well, we don't get it, but we're supportive.
They never said anything against it. And there was a lot of, I became sort of notorious in the area, and that caused some problems.
Yeah.
Especially, I broke some glass in the same town where my dad taught school.
Oh, okay.
And maybe somebody got cut a little bit with it, and that maybe caused some problems, you know.
Early glass breaking experiments. Yeah,
and he had to come and get me out of jail a couple times.
Boy, times have changed. Yeah. You broke a little glass. This shit doesn't stand in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Yeah, that's enough. Yeah. That is enough.
They are great people. And little by little, they realized I was getting somewhere with it, but also that I had serious, he makes quote signs, problems. You know, I had problems.
Were they, when you were going through that stuff and when you were kind of at the height of addiction, did you ever reach out to them or did they reach out to you or did you kind of leave them out?
Oh, yeah. They even helped me with that. When I finally really had to do my first big heroin kick, they had a friend who they were well liked in the area, so there was a local pharmacist who said, "Don't worry, he's not going to have to go to any clinic or anything." And he bought a bottle. I could still remember a bottle about the size of this container, full of a variant of methadone.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "You just have to tell your son, he come once a day. Just come to the pharmacy. I'll give him a dose." There was no prescription.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no clinic, no nothing. And that helped me a lot. Calmed me down, weaned me off. So, they knew what was going on. My dad, funnily, my dad's biggest concern. Look, he was a guy, you know, he fought in World War II, and he kept seeing how I performed and how I lived, and he was scratching his head and he was thinking, is he gay or what? and so finally one day he said, well, okay, at least you haven't lost your natural drives, because I was thinking I might have to disown you.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it was a different time.
It's a much different time.
He was a great
man.
He really was. And he wasn't too pushy about any of that. Nobody was wondering.
Well, I think too, especially as a father, it's like sometimes you just have to let your kids go.
Yeah.
Because maybe their own failure will be the biggest detour. You know, if you fall and, you know, you might, you know.
Well, you learn from your failures. You learn, like, that's, you know, not that you should seek to fail, but you shouldn't be afraid to fail, and you shouldn't be too down on yourself when you do, because that's where you learn.
Yeah.
And certainly, if you do anything in the arts, failure is mandatory for getting good. I mean, it's for anything, of course, but your biggest failures are the biggest stepping stone to something wonderful, you know?
How old is your kid now?
10, 4, and I have one that's like 3 weeks old.
Okay. Well, you got to just let them move out of the house now.
Yeah,
and just figure it
out. And say, you know, find your way, guys. It's like, find your way downstairs. See if you can make it downstairs.
You can do that. Yeah. Oh, you can't.
You're zero, huh?
Do you make fun of your 3-year-old because he can't even hold his head up?
Yeah, yeah. My 0-year-old.
Those aren't even words.
Like, quit acting like a babe. Well, okay.
All right. Yeah. You expect everyone to do everything for you.
Exactly.
But it's that. I mean, I'm everyone knows because I've said a million times on the podcast, but I'm a recovering alcoholic. I understand. I understand addiction to a degree.
Yeah,
but you know, I never got into drugs, and I never tried anything. Is it? At that time, were heavy drugs, heroin, was it just so much a part of the culture that it?
They were. I'm convinced, looking back, that there must have been some door quietly opened at the highest level to allow organized crime to swamp the country with hard drugs. It's about 1971 was when it really,
especially musicians, I mean, too, right? You know, it's like to like,
yeah, but it was like everywhere. Oh,
John
everybody.
Lennon should not be in the country or busting people. It feels like there was perhaps that door of like, get the musicians high and get
before
them out of here.
Before that, it was more like, you know, a forbidden, dangerous thing to even have a joint or something. But all of a sudden, man, that stuff was everywhere and it was cheap and every scumbag. Every lowlife had it and was offering it to you, and I don't know. Things changed.
I mean, I understand how that could proliferate, particularly in a community of people who, you know, look, you jump around on stage for a bit, and then you go back, and you're just in a hotel room alone, and you still have this nervous energy, really tough to deal with.
Yeah, right. And you know, I was taking a lot of when I first started, I used to smoke a lot of dope before I went on just to calm me down.
Mm-hmm.
But as I had to keep doing it more and more and try to keep the group moving forward, which wasn't easy, I started dropping acid a lot before I'd perform, you know. Yeah. And that really takes you to a point where you'd like a nice security blanket later.
Right.
You know? I would have my heroin now and curl up in bed.
Yeah. And, my coffee and my heroin, right, please.
You know? So I think that was something to do with it, too. That stuff's hard in your psyche, and it's usually cut with a hell of a lot of speed anyway. You know, the street stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Do you ever think about those days and go, how did I make it through that?
Well, I don't sort of do the how. Maybe once in a while this little why comes up or something. Yeah. Why? How does that work? You know, something like that. But I do have, you know, very decent memories of some of the certain things that I managed to be a part of in my life in those times. It's not all bad, but the the discomforts were tremendous, very tough, but only in an interior way, you know, most of it from otherwise. I was free. I was doing what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting in touch with everybody.
And leaving a mark.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. You know, I just didn't think about things like houses or cars,
sure,
or bank accounts or anything like that, you know.
It's probably best.
Yeah, it was better. Yeah, you know, that stuff's not much fun.
Well, those things are the boat anchor of making art. You know what I mean? If you're like, oh, I better get my house payment together. This next song is about my house payment.
Well, 1, 2, 3, 4.
It's called compounded interest.
This is one of the big problems.
That's how the song Footloose was created. You know what I mean? It's like, that's no good.
Kenny Loggins and Just Refinance.
Opposite. Yeah, just like, do refi. How do I sing about being free while not being free?
I mean, is it... Do you believe in the idea or not believe in the idea of commercial success? And it's like if you're coming out of a punk scene, but then you start to get commercial success, and then is that bad or is it good or is it natural or how does that fuck with your head?
For me, it's been good. The way I feel is it's clearly known that I was described for many, many years variously as pariah, homeless, crazy, rolls in glass, vomits, blah, 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 and all this stuff. And so it's great now if I can, like, have a whole lot of dough and a nice house and, like, do nice things and have little jammies and stuff. That's all right. That's, you know, that's how I feel about it.
I mean, I think that's actually the most punk attitude, is, like, just not giving, just making yourself happy and not giving a fuck.
Yeah, and I think most people who, you know, are sort of human, then they're okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't care. They don't have to be impressed.
Yeah.
You know, is that, it's just that they're okay with that.
All the stories. Yeah. Have you ever heard stories about you that that you know aren't true? But you're, how the fuck did that get around?
You know, I suppose I have. I can't. Nothing is popping into my mind at the moment. But yeah, there's a lot.
Because the legend, you know, like the legend of it will spread. Oh, one time I saw him fuck a snake on stage. No, you never saw that.
Well, actually, I never rolled in broken glass, actually. And all that happened was I was playing a tight club. It was Max's Kansas City. And at that particular place in the 70s, they served the cocktails in these sort of goblet-shaped glasses that go down to a little stem, and then they have a very thick base, you know, so they won't tip over. And it was someone's bright idea that the audience was all seated at little cocktail tables. And they were all fucking critics, too.
And everyone is.
I got out on stage and I was blinded by the reflection from their spectacles, right? You know, a room full of spectacles, right? You know? And so I'm pounded away here, you know, maybe a little stoned, all right? Okay. And I think I either went to do a stage dive, although the stage was only 8 inches tall, right? But that's what I do.
Yeah,
I mean, I do
itself.
A stage dive, right? Or I tried to climb on the table. I can't remember. But at any rate, somehow there was a glass was broken and it was on the floor and I landed on it by mistake. That was just a mistake. But the way I am, I got up and I continued the song, and then I noticed it was this pretty fucking serious gash, and it's like squirting like a Renaissance painting, you know, like where the squirt Saint Sebastian and the blood is squirting. But it wasn't like I was going to stop.
Right.
It wasn't like I was going to say, oh, you know. So I just did what I did, and then the night went on. That it went on and on the night, but I didn't roll in broken glass. Actually, what I did was I went to someone's apartment on the Upper East Side, who one of the roadies later described in an interview as, I couldn't believe it. He's bleeding all over, and she looked just like Lauren Bacall and whisked him away in her chauffeur-driven limo. And all I remember is that there was a big fishbowl full of quaaludes on the coffee table, and I remember reaching out my hand out, and the next thing I remember, I was crawling on down 81st Street trying to get to Lexington
like a version of walking home.
I couldn't, but and somehow after that, somewhere in between, I think I went to a hospital on Alice Cooper's dime or something, and in the somewhere to get.
But I love the idea of being on all fours trying to hail a cab.
Yeah. And okay, well, no one will pick me up.
Blackwood.
You raise your arm and the blood just starts squirting out.
Well, that's why he's trying to get to Lexington. It's easy.
You know, I was up and down. You know what I mean? I was, oh shit! Well, I'll
the Quaalude way.
Yeah.
Sponsored by Quaaludes.
But I didn't roll in broken glass.
The story was much worse.
Yes, it was much worse.
That's funny. Some of the stories that he's shared with me, too, it's like, wow, that's actually way worse than what the
they didn't really cover it fully at all.
But that's the first time that's ever happened, you know, because I've had my own experiences of being called certain names and doing certain things. And
yeah.
And traditionally,
yeah,
the story
I heard about
gets
that. My attorney warned me.
Yeah, I've had
he's
troubles.
He's notorious.
Yeah. And not to the extent you have been, but that willingness to do whatever it takes, you know, whatever feels right. But what's interesting is hearing his stories. I every time I'm like, oh, that's way worse than what the. That's absolutely worse. Or the one time you're like, yeah, someone said you ruined my house in Monaco. I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but I don't remember that. Really, I apologize.
I've got one of those ruined
No, that's
house
your
people.
Story. That's
oh,
your story.
Oh, my one. Yeah.
But I was like, wait a minute, you ruined a house in Monaco? What the hell are you
Did
doing
you ruin
in
a house in Monaco?
No, it was in Haiti.
Oh, well, that's totally different.
Haiti, that's
totally different.
Yeah, that's way different, actually, yeah. than Monaco.
How did you ruin it?
What?
How did you ruin it?
I don't know. They say I ruined it. I think what I did was
they all start with him reaching his hand.
Have you ever known? I have a little of this in me. Have you ever known the kind of person, sometimes they're a hoarder, sometimes they're just arty, but they go to a place and they have to start rearranging all the things and tacking mm-hmm. up little things about themselves everywhere until suddenly it just looks crazy? Yeah. Maybe
it's
like
a string
that.
Theory, maybe like know. That. Yeah, just yeah. rearrange things.
Yeah, yeah, that's all.
I'm going to set this across the room.
Yeah.
But that came back at me like, you know, it was like, 18 years later, I was a completely respectable citizen. I was doing Rock the Vote adverts.
Yes, I remember that.
See somebody, two women just came up to me at a bar in Chelsea and just, you ruined our house. You know? And just like, I'm sorry.
Don't forget to vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know.
Write your congressman.
Oh, wait, you live in Haiti. Forget it.
Lower Haiti.
Did you? Well, well done. When you hear about these stories, do you feel like, oh, I don't think I'm that rock and roll anymore?
Well, but I honestly, I don't qualify it like that because I think of the willingness. You know, what I love is the willingness to pursue yourself, mm-hmm. you know, without consequence.
Yeah.
You know, And how this is – we don't work at a bank.
Right.
This is the job if you are willing to like, you know, machete, jungle, go, you know. And I love that and it's inspiring to me because – and it's also – it also helps to make me feel better about what right. I've done because it's – because I've done some – things, you know.
It's all right, Josh. Yeah. Let it out. Come on, well, you're among friends.
But you know, and like you know, it's like you know, the thing, truth is, you get thrown out of a few places, and you're like, well, I thought I was just, sorry, you know.
Yeah.
And but also, you do some things on stage, and you know, that's what that took that night. I'm sorry. Did that bother you?
Right.
I'm sorry.
You still basically have to. I mean, in a lot of cases, you're playing the same songs that you've played for years and years and years. And
I need them to be real every night.
How do you keep that fresh? And how do you stay in the moment? How do you?
But also, if I may separate myself from, yeah, I want to be a good person. I want to do nice things and make someone happy. And I'd like, but then also when it's time to do that, it's you turn off all the lights in the house of your personality and leave the one light on that would walk up and do whatever that is.
Yeah,
and. I hate to say I'm not responsible for whatever happens, but I like that's just that one room in your personality. That's the person that would walk out
that's
and do
very
that.
Good.
And I'm not necessarily in control of the person in that room all the time. And I'm not sorry about that at all. But in the daytime when the light in that room is off and the other lights are on, I want to do nice things for someone and listen to them and be cordial and civil and. But I'm not always in control of that room upstairs.
The kill room.
Yeah, definitely. Drag the body all the way up. Yeah.
So how do you keep something fresh and in the moment?
Back to with the singing it over and over. He's singing over and over.
It's
1922 and he's a dog. He comes here. It's still a dog. He's got a dog shirt. He's singing about the dog.
He
still
wants to be someone's
always
dog.
The dog.
Someone adopt this pet, would you?
Well, that's why I wanted to make a new record.
Yeah.
So I made a new record of different stuff with some fresh blood, you know. And
not at all what I expected when I started listening to it. It's completely different than what I expected. It's great.
So that was one thing. And then we also do – we play some of my songs together, but we're playing many of them. They're songs that either have never been done on stage, some of them, or not very much.
Yeah,
you know.
A whole record of flamenco style Carpenters covers.
Right.
Great idea.
Speed Mariachi.
Right.
finally, it's
actually,
come to life.
We've got one that's kind of like Flamenco Carpenters.
A bit.
Yeah, right? Totally. Kind of. Yeah. Think about it. Right? Yeah.
Speed Mariachi is fucking amazing. That has to be a thing.
Let's bring it to the forefront,
that
would you?
That has to be a thing. Yeah. Well, it kind of reminds me of something I read about you seeing the Doors for the first time.
Yeah.
Were you a fan of the Doors?
Yes. You were? I was a qualified fan. I listened very, very closely to the first album. And there were a lot of good things in it, but because I'd already been in bands and made records myself, I could tell how many overdubs had been used and how much it had been worked over in the studio to make it gel. It didn't sound yet like an act. It didn't sound quite actual, but there were things in it. Whoa. You know, the vocal, the warmth of the vocals and the way the guitarist left space, Robbie Krieger, the way the sense of spaciousness and romanticism in the guitar. It was unique at that
very
time.
Very strange band, makeup of a band, and, flamenco and
I
jazz.
Was real interested in the drummer. I'd been a drummer, and Densmore played like a jazz drummer, as did Charlie Watts, too.
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, when he hit the cymbal, you heard the bing, 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 bing. You hear the beauty of the cymbal, and yeah. when he hit the snare, he hit it properly. Whereas Ringo, who did this great ruin things for all drummers, he invented something called the monkey grip. And that's where you grip both sticks like a monkey grips a banana, right? And you just start beating louder and louder and louder, right? But before that, proper drummers use the parade grip. You have monkey on one hand, and you do this.
Yeah.
He flicks his wrist.
Traditional grip.
Like chopstick. Yeah. Like you're using a chopstick. Densmore plays that way. So because of that, he sets up a beat. Your toe is tapping. Your butt starts to wiggle a little bit. But he's not loud so that other musicians can come in and create atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was real interested. And
How were they live?
They didn't – well – they were absolutely abjectly terrible the first time. It was so terrible, I was fascinated with how terrible they were. But then by the time I saw them a second time, they came through Detroit after the second album, they were totally pro. They had it down. They had a big sound. It was great, but wasn't maybe quite as much fun.
Right.
You know, it was still fun. It was still cool, but it wasn't like – so I was in a little field house. A basketball place where they play college basketball, and they just set up a little stage for them. It was a homecoming dance for it was all the big guys and their dates and everything. But the public could come in, and I went. I had a little date, you know, and we got near the stage, and the band came out, and they were going to start playing the intro to it was Soul Kitchen. But you noticed that they had these – I think they'd gotten an endorsement from some amp company, and the amp sucked. They were either Jordan Boss, do you remember those?
No, that's
Custom. They might
custom,
have been Custom.
Yeah, Custom.
Yeah. And the only good thing about a Custom amp was it had this Naugahyde tuck and roll.
Tuck and roll. That's
the tuck and
to
roll.
Cover up how like
right,
mediocre
how horrible it was.
Yeah.
So the sound just didn't – they didn't have a good sound system. They just had little column speakers. So it just didn't sound very good. It wasn't that they couldn't play, but it just sounded wimpy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they played and played and played, and nothing happened. And then finally out comes this guy, and he had on like – black leatherette costume, straight Hollywood Boulevard, you know, with the little pointy boots, big ruffled shirt. He had his hair oiled, and it looked like Hedy Lamarr. And he was whacked. His pupils were big black pupils, you know. And he lurched around the stage and made like these gestures. And then he began to sing the song in a feminine falsetto.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
The clock says it's time to close. And the guys start getting mad, right? So finally he did, and I've done this when I was stoned in shows too, and later in life on LSD. He just looked around, he said,
Not that one. Yeah. he points at Robbie Krueger. My man, play the blues. And so they started playing. It's a bluesy number they
Black
have.
Backdoor Man. Or
yeah, one of those like they can't remember.
Yeah.
And he's doing all the things that obnoxious drunk does at a bar, like putting his arm around and going to every, hey, this is my man. You know?
You know? This is my man.
Right?
I love him. Yeah.
But he looks great. Mm-hmm. You know, you would just want to take him home. Yeah. You know, right? Yeah. He looks awesome. And the guys are getting mad. You know, this is, dude, what is this guy? Is he like, think this is a joke or something, you know? And so it basically was a failed gig. They managed to play. It was still only 30, 40 minutes. I think they played as long as to get paid.
Yeah.
And the guys were getting closer and closer to the stage. And finally, they just skedaddled, you know?
Holy shit.
I thought, well, okay, you have no more excuse now. You know, it's not how good do I have to be? You know,
setting the bar at a certain level.
Right,
I think
right.
I could hop over that thing. Yeah,
right. These guys have a hit record. All right.
But it's funny because my dad saw the Doors in D.C. and he said, oh, Robbie or, you know, Ray Manzarek was great. He played organ with two hands. And I thought, oh, that's gross. But then but he was like, and Morrison was just wasted. But I remember thinking, wow, that's cool, man.
Right. The wasted
That seems like my jazz right there. You know?
I wonder if you – because I'm sure when you're super fucked up, obviously your perception of what's going on is
it's amazing.
Different. So I wonder if, you know, if Jim Morrison had lived and then they'd showed him – if you ever look at old performances and go, I don't really remember it being that way. It was much different in my head.
It wasn't that different. I knew I was weird. There's a really good one of me on the internet. It's performing the song Bang Bang. It's at a German television show called Bananas, and it's in the early 80s.
Bananas?
I got there, and they – or Big Banana or something. I think it's Bananas, and they decided – the first line in Bang Bang is young girls know what they're after. So they – found a bunch of virginal-looking young German girls, like sort of like in one of those terrible films it used to make back in the day. But they were all in they were all in angelic gowns, and they arranged them from the tallest to the shortest in a choir me. So the shortest ones were just little girls, little 6-7-year-old girls up to these big Brunhildes in the middle. And I sang the song, and I mean, I was pretty bad at that point. I had no front tooth. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. I got news for you. It was.
Yeah, right. And this ruffled shirt, and I'm making all these jerky movements, like these weird jerky dance movements. And I was trying to be I'll try to be as cool as I could be about this, you know. And I did it, and the girls are there all kind of looking at me like, you know. And they were,
we thought this was the difference.
This is bananas.
I was told it would be bananas.
This is not a tradition of bananas.
It's not appealing.
Oh, no.
It's the kind of show.
Josh, nine.
That was the kind of show where they have a guy on the – they have a guy with a clipboard on the stage. And when you finish the song, he points at the audience. And then that's –
that's very German.
Clap now.
Yeah, exactly.
Mr. Iggy
Pop. That's right. You will clap.
But those moments actually become the coolest moments. Like you watch the Tom Snyder show, if you go back on YouTube, and your moment where you're out of your mind, and then the PIL moment where they're just talking shit to him the entire time, saying it's a fucking company and refusing to look at him and all this stuff, are the two most watched ones of the old Tom Snyder show. And it's kind of like, you're welcome, Tom, you know, because the moments where you're willing to just do whatever.
Tom.
Yeah,
I liked Tom.
Yeah.
He was one of those tall guys who doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, but so just keep going.
He was always bending over and trying, and he was a really nice guy. I really liked
but
him.
He has to keep going.
Yeah, but he had to act
with you.
He's like, serious,
oh,
you know.
Yeah, how do I keep going here? It's cool.
What do you think is the worst decade Is there, was it for
80s?
The 80s, yeah.
Oh, I suffered through the 80s. And that was in the 80s when I was performing that song with the on Bananas. Or I remember once in the lowest point I hit in the 80s was, I think, did I not have to open for Flock of Seagulls?
Did you really?
At the Peppermint, at the Peppermint Lounge. I think so. And I was so upset. I'm opening for Flock of Seagulls. I've got to do something about this. What will I do? How will I steal the show from Flock of Seagulls? So I called up the roadie and I said, I want you to get some 4x6s. I want you to make me a big cross. And then I'll come. I want green paint. So I painted my face green and dragged this enormous cross out onto the stage in the Peppermint Lounge. And people just scratched their heads. You know, like,
I did it. I got him, right?
I got you. Yeah, they'll stop listening to And I Ran. You know, this will totally fight back from the bottom and destroy the stranglehold the media has upon my potential listeners. So it was bad, you know.
It's funny. You know, what's interesting to hear you say is like, because I'd asked before, like, what are you rebelling against? It sounds like you're just rebelling against moments, like whatever is in the moment that you kind of feel like I want to fuck with this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, those moments fade and there's a new one coming. You know, I think there's a sense to that where it's like, okay, that one's finished. And so this new thing is coming. And plus, like, banal and boring comes in waves, you know? It's like, how do you stop this next wave of total boring trash that's imminent, you know?
Well, also, just having survived so many different forms of media consumption throughout the past 5 decades.
That's a good choice of the survived, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, because it's funny, you know, you talk about Flock of Seagulls, and of course, you know, now you know I Ran, you might know Space Age Love Song, but it's not – but I don't know. I'm sure maybe they still tour to a degree, but somehow
– Guam.
Guam, yeah. you know,
that's where you
the
go.
The snakes on the plane.
How are you – get these motherfucking snakes on the motherfucking plane, Josh. But how do you navigate each iteration of the business and each you know, thing that's popular with what's going on with people? Do you just not even think about any of that stuff?
No, I do. I think it's important to be aware of what other people are doing, no matter what I think of it. So, I'm aware of it. But it usually provokes a reaction with me. That's how I react to it. I'm not going to join up, you know, but I'm going to react, you know. But in some cases... You know, I did my agent, lovely lady, twisted my arm and got me to do American Idol. And I didn't want to go do American Idol, but then I thought about it, and she said, Iggy, this is big. It would be good for you, really. You know, and I think it's not going to be good for me. They're going to hate me, you know. And finally, I said, okay, I'm going to go do American Idol, be the guest guy, right?
Yeah.
And they gave me a nice young band from L.A., backed me up, let me choose the song. And I was all revved up to go, you know? So I got out there, and the stage manager pointed, and I started the song, and we broke into it. And then they cut it. Because, you know, sometimes like Ryan Seacrest hadn't done his hair or something, you know? and then he introduced me by saying, I don't know if I'm ready for this, but here's, you know, because he'd seen a little bit. So I was like a fish out of water there, that's for sure. But on the other hand,
as someone that loves infiltration, is one of my favorite corruptive hobbies.
I infiltrated. American Idol.
I like to infiltrate and eat from like the good cancer from the inside out, you know, because it's like, I destroy you. You're nothing but facade now. You know, it's just, it crumbles. I don't mind shit like that. Cause I
was the subject of a CBS poll the next day of the American people. Do you think Iggy Pop was cool or did he make a fool of himself? 75% fool.
Did that make you happy?
Fool, 75%.
Too cool for fool.
Yeah. I liked that. Cooler but 25%, that's a lot of people. Right? That's a lot of people, right?
But I think you also have to think about the quality of the people voting in a
poll.
Well,
no, I know that. Yeah. I'm aware of this. But you want those low quality people.
Yeah.
You want those looky-loos. Mm-hmm. You want them. You also want the bad people. The people come for the wrong.
You sound like the Trump
campaign.
They
have to pay. Just pay the goddamn money. Shut the fuck up. You can be bad. You can be dumb. You can be ugly. I don't care. You're just as good as a cool person, you know. And I will treat you the same.
Yeah,
because that's the job. Yeah. It's a burger.
Yeah. You know? All right. Sound burger.
You have to give Sound everybody burger. The same burger.
Is there a distinction between you and the guy on stage? Or do you see Iggy Pop as this separate entity, or are you him?
I think we cohabit the same body.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how that, you know.
I mean, when you're kind of walking around home, like, what are you thinking about?
Oh, often Iggy Pop things. And then what happens when I'm doing that is like, what am I doing? Where's my glasses?
Yeah.
Where's my phone? Or my wife will say, I'll ask her a question and say, I just told you that 5 minutes ago. I'll say, oh, but I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking about Iggy Pop things.
Him again.
Hand on the same switch, you know.
Yeah, right?
One wants
to
throw it on, the other one wants to turn it off. You know?
Did you ever think at some point, like, oh, I want to try to be embody a different type of guy. I want to embody a different character. I want to do a different kind of thing. Or did you all just see it as pieces of?
Well, I think I do. I do other things, mostly it's interesting. There's something about the Iggy Pop thing that is so robust that it causes others to ignore the other things I do. Mm-hmm. They just say, oh, we won't pay too much attention to that. Okay, he sang a nice ballad in French. He sang a Sinatra song. Oh, we won't. Let's get back to this Iggy Pop thing.
Right.
Get some glass. Cut yourself.
Take your shirt off.
Yeah. So, you know.
Do you mind, balladeering with this glass on your chest?
Yeah. I don't really make up plans or anything, but I'm just really interested in if I was quick and funny, I'd try what you do. I'd try a podcast, and
I think you got to do that anyway.
Yeah, right. I'm not any good at basketball, you know. So I catch out. You know, I'm a spaz and I'm short. You know? So that's no good. You know, right there.
You recognized your strengths.
Yeah, right. A short spaz. What could a short spaz do?
Could paint himself green and drag across on stage.
I made an album in '98. Called Avenue B, and it was much different than the sound that people associated with me and the marvelous and erudite, witty reviewer for Rolling Stone started out by saying, okay, look, I get it. This guy is tired of being a spaz. And but this doesn't make it. We give it 2 stars, you know. Right? 2 stars.
Sounds like the script of Revenge of the Nerds. You know? He's tired of being spaz.
Yeah, he's tired of being a spaz.
That's what's so interesting, right? is I feel like there's this double standard, this weird expectation. It's like, as an artist, if you're going to keep putting stuff out, people expect you to push an envelope. They expect you to try different things, but then
not that way, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that way.
No, the other way that I don't know, but just not that way. Like, how do you? I guess you really don't have any other guide than just whatever you fucking feel like doing.
Well, it's got to be a little like I wanted to sing some Sinatra songs, and I could just picture it. I said to myself, am I going to get support from the industry or the public in America? Iggy Pop is going to do the American Songbook. No, you know. So I snuck off to France, and I just did a little record. I got it funded and released through a fashion website, a guy who wanted to get involved in music, and half of it's French French ballads, mm-hmm. sung in French, and half of it is old Sinatra bel canto. And I threw Michelle by the Beatles in there because
nice.
It's French and English, mm-hmm. right? I wanted to meld. I saw a connection yeah. between the two feelings. And it's a nice little record. And it's not that – it's not like I'm not Caruso. I'm not even Rod Stewart. But it's a nice little record. I learned to sing better by doing that record. And it helped me go in the direction that we got to for this record. But the thing I really liked about it was – after it had been out a few years, I did a show, a rock show there, you know, hard-hitting, balls-out show, and a guy came backstage. He owns a string of wine shops, upscale wine shops, and he said, you know, Iggy Pop, I order your album, I'll pray 25 at a time, and I put it on the counter next to the wine, and it always sells out. And then I order 25 more. And that was a great feeling for me.
Nice.
Yeah, be with the wine and the cheese and, you know, and the parlez vous.
Did you ever
everything.
Think you would see that day?
Well, I was, no. But that's a very nice thing. And you're talking to people, you know, not enough people speak French. They're getting worried about becoming overcome. So it's nice for them if somebody will sing some of their songs in French and give them a chance to say, well, but your French is terrible, you know, which
but
they will.
But what I love about the French is they mandatorily inject art into their lives and their culture.
Yes. It's part of everything.
And it must be this way, mm-hmm. whether you like it or not. There's this allotment of like – you must be cultured, and you must receive yes. this culture, or else, you know. And mm-hmm. And the world gets better when you do that. When you have this emphasis on art, no matter what medium it is, you know, there's this great emphasis there, and that I would be into if we took a cue from here, and instead of cutting art out of, well, we'll get rid of that. We don't need.
We don't need that.
Yeah, that doesn't. Yeah, sure, that building looks cool, but whatever. Let's just, you know. So I like the emphasis there that they have.
You know. What are you the most when you think about everything so far? What are you the most proud of? Is there anything that you're kind of the is like
whatever we did together?
I mean,
by,
as a given,
post-op depression,
as post-op depression,
and produced by Joshua Hobby.
That's right.
With D14 and Van Elders.
Next
available
question.
March 18th, Loma Vista Records, baby, baby, baby.
I mean, I remember being high on acid and surfing down a blowjob fountain, yeah. but this record with Josh Hommy. Has to be.
Clearly that trumps that big time.
You know, I did. I used to go swimming. You know that big fountain at the corner where Wilshire and Santa Monica?
Yeah,
the blowjob.
I used to go. Oh, is that the blowjob?
No, I'm just kidding.
But when I was very poor here and I didn't have a pool or access to the beach, I would
hop in the fountain.
I'd go over to that neighborhood when nobody's looking in the fountain, and I would swim around in a circle. Restroom.
Honey, I just saw the funniest thing. I think I saw Iggy Pop swimming in the fountain.
And I'm very proud. Very proud. I did that really cool on the QT. Nobody ever caught me. Or anything, you know. It's only about 14 inches deep.
You're
you know?
Probably never going to die.
Yeah.
There's some shit in
I think
fountain.
If anything that you've proven,
shit in that
the
fountain.
One thing that you've proven is that you cannot be killed.
Is what you've been inoculated.
That's why
everything.
That's why I'm here to learn. I'm just here to learn.
That fountain was a step up for me. It was Beverly Hills.
He's going to take his thumbnail and slice and just pour the blood into your mouth.
Fountain of
Josh,
youth.
Now you will be born to darkness, as
exactly.
I call it.
Let's do this. I'd sort of be like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, sure.
Let's I've do done it. Everything on. Else. Let's try this. Well. Why couldn't this work?
We might as well. Do your friends call you Iggy? Like, are you Iggy in your life?
Yeah, more and more. It used to be Jim, and then it got to there was a tipping point when all of a sudden I'd been Iggy longer than I'd been Jim. And then it all tipped, and then everybody just called me Iggy.
And that's it. And you're fine with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just before we're wrapping this up, you know, there are two people in here who are hardcore music experts, my friend April and my friend Kyle.
Oh,
do
shit,
either
uh-oh.
Of you have a question that you want to ask since we're all... Yeah, if you can.
I love your shirt, by the way.
Thank you.
So much.
I actually am curious, because I'm a big New Order fan, how that collaboration came about, you being on their latest album.
You're a big what fan?
New Order.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
I didn't mean to stomp you.
Yeah, it was pretty much by email.
Oh,
you
okay.
know, and he just sent me a. You mean the last one? The one the.
Yeah, the most recent one.
Oh, this one. Well, I knew them. Okay, I met them doing the Tibet House benefit at Carnegie Hall. Philip Glass called me. And said, well, I've got these. You know, there's a British band, New Order, and they'd really like to do some songs with you. So, and then me and Bernard corresponded, and then we had a call, and I ended up singing some songs with them, and we got to know each other a little bit. And so then he just sent me a thing. I wrote a poem. Will you say my poem? And I said, yeah, right. I'll say your poem.
Well, that also answered. I was wondering if you wrote it or if you wrote it.
And they just sent the track, and they sent me the poem. And I spent about – it was a cheap job. So I only spent about – I spent about 4 hours – internalizing his lines a little bit, and he did a demo sort of get his rhythm, and then I just went in and cut it about 6 times maybe and sent it to him like that.
Oh, okay. Oh, so you guys weren't even in the same room?
No.
Oh, okay.
But we have been in the same room.
Right. Before. Have you really met him? Come on.
And I did a lecture in for the BBC, and Bernard came in England during the gestation of our relationship. And he asked a question about, you know, don't we really need to stop these people who are stealing our music with these computerized devices and they have no soul and blah, blah, blah. We need to do so. And I said, well, I advised him maybe he could get a job like hosting a TV show.
It's really easy.
Was perfectly sensible to me. I would love to have a job hosting a TV show. And I was hoping there's a show about wildlife in England. I was hoping that Bernard and I could co-host someday. Like, my idea would be that Bernard could take me to quaint little English places. What's a country file? It's called Country File. Uh-huh. And I could be like the American going, wow.
Oh, my God. Right? What? I would watch that in a second.
Has an even personality, a nice vocal delivery. So I thought he could, well, see, this church, which has been here since the 13th century, is inhabited by bats. And I could go, wow.
You know? Fuck.
And be that guy.
I greenlight that TV show.
But he didn't pick up on that. I just got the poetry.
Come on, Bernard. Get fucking on it.
Yeah. One step at a time.
The world needs this show to happen. How do you get to the because of your energy on stage, like when you're not feeling it or you feel like you're up against the wall, how do you force yourself into that place, or do you not try?
It's terror.
the fire.
There's a lot of people in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are people there. Hey, you know, what the fuck? There are people there.
So you do. It is.
I prepare for a long time on a show day. It takes me quite a while to get it up, you know. As I get older, it takes longer and longer. It's more and more work to get it up. That's the way it is, you know. I try to do my best, and I've modified, you know. There are less stage dive moments. There's more even delivery, just different things, less screeching.
Well, you can throw Josh off the stage. He's rugged. Yeah. He can handle it.
Lawsuit. No.
Kyle, do you have a question you want?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Giant Man crushes 20 members.
Yeah. First of all, Funhouse is my favorite album of all time, so thank you.
Thanks very much.
I just want to know if you can touch on, because I've heard a little bit of it, how Watt ended up playing with the Stooges.
Yeah. Watt was one of a group of people, included Thurston Moore and singer of Mudhoney, Mark Arm, and the guitarist, dentist's son from Northampton, Dinosaur Jr., Jay. These people were real interested in Ron at a certain
time and in Scott, and they started doing different differently configured gigs where Watt and Scott and Ron and someone else would go out as a band and play festivals, or Ron would tour with Jay Masses and they'd and do the encore doing Stooges songs, this sort of thing. So that went on for a couple of years, and that led me, that put me in a place where I could try to resurrect the group because they were out there too. So there was less differential between the flow of what we were doing. And then when it came time to figure out who's going to play bass when we actually go out and do gigs, we got offered a big gig at Coachella. Watt had earned, he'd earned his place because he was the guy who went out there and slogged.
Yeah, he's a good guy too.
Yeah, so that's how, you know.
Besides playing Speed Mariachi under the band name Cotterpins,
Cotterpins. I don't know where that, but it's just one of those things that always made an impression. And I hate it. You know, I don't want to spend my life dealing with a fucking Cotterpin, right? I want to do something else, you know.
Like Mr. Cotterpins.
Yeah, Mr. Cotterpins. Yeah. Hey, Mr. Cotterpins. So what else? You know, do you have a slew of things that you still haven't done yet that you want to do, or is it, do you take it moment to moment? What do you want to?
The things I want to do, I'm probably never going to get to do. You know, like I would like to run away to Paraguay and create a kind of a small cult or something.
It's not too late.
Yeah, I think I can still, you know.
Yes, sir.
A small cult.
Yeah, things like that, you know, or maybe like just live out my days in a little apartment near the Vatican, sipping coffee and visiting the Sistine Chapel.
Go use that one ATM that's in Latin.
And yeah. Graffitiing Bernini's. You know, Bernini has all these big columns there in Bernini's piazza in front of the Vatican. And there's really scribbled graffiti all over them. I'd like to graffiti on those and just be like that, you know. But I don't think I'm going to do that either. There are things. I'm not sure what. I have no. I don't have any plans really.
What do you think is the best thing a person, as we're kind of winding this down, what do you think is the best thing a person can do, an artist, a performer, to try to discover who they are, like to bring out who they are, figure out what their voice is, their point of view?
You think you have to recognize the big three, which is yourself, the people you want to connect to, and then the society that is around, surrounds you both. Mm-hmm. You have to recognize and balance your, you have to communicate with those three. You have to, and also to deal with those three.
Do you
try to balance it.
It's respecting the society or trying to shake the society?
No, just be aware of it and decide.
I see.
Okay,
there.
I think today I could get away with a little disrespect. You know, but maybe, but
gauging,
but not,
you know?
at dinner, be nice. You know, is the state I'm in now a little bit. You know. So be aware of it and then work out your strategies.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think you have to be aware. You know, it's not like, oh, we could just live. There shouldn't be any money. So I'll find a way to just live completely without. No.
Right.
There's this stuff. There are these ways that things go, and there are things that people are going to say about you and all that. But that shouldn't be the whole game either.
Mm-hmm.
Or you end up as one of these suicidal billionaires.
Right.
Actually, you don't hear about suicidal billionaires. It's
There's
the millionaires.
Like four of them.
You know, people, but a lot of people make a lot of money and then they blow it, you know, because they don't listen to themselves anymore. And then also you've got to get something from the people you actually want to connect with.
Yeah.
And that, if depending on what sort of person you are, now if you're that mean guy who charges $750 now for that life.
Martin Shkreli.
Yeah, if you're him, you want to connect with some suckers, right?
Right.
You know? But if you're somebody else, you just want somebody to give you a hug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think depends. It's also the idea of the when you I think seeking too many external things to fix you, I think that's where people are like, "Oh, I made $1 million, now what?" You know, oh, wow. I don't,
why didn't that work?
I thought this was supposed to make me, now I feel worse.
Yeah, why are we?
That didn't work.
Yeah.
Do you remember, was there one moment on stage where you said, aha, this is Iggy? Or was it a slow transition? Did you discover it over time or did something click at one point?
The second gig I ever did, you know, as a vocal, it was the first time I did lead vocals. I thought, yeah. Yeah, okay. You know, I thought I had something going on. You know, the first gig, I was trying to be an instrumentalist still, so I had a guitar, slide guitar, and I had a pair of golf shoes hooked up to a piece of galvanized steel I was standing on with contact mics so that I could scat dance and play at the same time.
God, that's amazing.
And I was also singing.
Me and my golf shoes.
And I thought, well, what could I do to look interesting? So I made a Afro wig out of a shower cap and heavy-duty aluminum foil. I made it myself and curled it. And I was in white face. And I wore a maternity dress. So that was an interesting performance. But then by the next one, that was just too much to deal with. So the second time, I just went out barefoot, pair of jeans, no shirt, white face.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the look. And then the approach was to dance and scream and scuffle while the guys in the group playing the instruments played these kind of droning riffs.
Yeah.
And then the third gig, I didn't realize that I shaved off my eyebrows for the white face. You need eyebrows.
There's a reason we
you
have.
Know.
Otherwise, yeah. you just look too surprised about everything.
You know, I got these horrible styes in my eye because the sweat, it just went right down, you know.
It's a thing you learn.
Yes, right.
One learns when one shaves a brow.
Yeah, exactly. Outside of Josh Homme, who's your second favorite collaboration?
Josh Homme.
You can't be one and two.
I'm one, two, and seven.
You can't?
And that's the way I am everywhere I go.
I'll allow it.
I can't rate him. A lot of good people.
Yeah.
You know, David Bowie, Steve Jones.
Steve Jones.
Yeah. Jonesy. Is a gas.
His Instagram is amazing, by the way.
It's Ron Ashton. You know, so.
That's great.
A lot of people.
Well, it's been really great to have you here. And I really appreciate you coming in and fucking around. And Josh Homme, one of these days I'm going to convince you to come on at midnight.
And
you're going to bring fucking Dave Grohl on, and you guys are going to be funny.
Head to head. Yeah.
You're going to take him down.
Of course I will.
Oh, the challenge has been laid, Grohl. The challenge has been laid. Step it up.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All right. Well, it's good to see you. Post-pop depression, March 18th. Was that the date?
Yeah.
March 18th, post-pop depression.
Thanks a lot,
it's good to see you.
All right, Chris.
Thanks, man. Come back anytime.
I hope the bleeding stops
thanks,
for you.
Buddy.
Thanks.
Josh. Oh, yeah, you left a sample right on his chest.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There you go. Signed and delivered.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Keep that in there.
Never wash that.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. All right.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.